Core presentation filled with the same insight, music, and voices you've come to expect. Stay tuned and enjoy. And welcome to a very special show of To Heal DC. We're going to be talking about the 100th anniversary of the sleeping car porters, a century of labor history. Before we begin the show, we're going to hear a little bit from none other than Duke Ellington, Daybreak Express, and we'll be talking, among many other things, the relationship between jazz musicians and the sleeping car porters. So let's hear a little bit of Duke. Today to be talking about the 100th anniversary of the sleeping car porters, a century of labor history, and also a great match with what we stand for at WPFW, Jazz and Justice. And I want to welcome Katia, who will be my partner today, asking you for a little bit of contributions to keep us going. Good morning, Katia.
Good morning, Joni. So delighted to be with you as always.
Yes, and our goal for this morning is, I'm not sure what it is, but probably
$500 for this morning.
Oh, $500. We could make that easily.
Yes, and they can put five on it, $500 on it.
Yes, and we'll be giving the information out, but of course you can call 202-588-0893. Or you can go to our website, wpfwfm.org, and we'll be sharing other ways you can make those donations as well. I'm excited that my co-host, Chuck Hicks, is with us this morning. And we are excited to introduce our wonderful guests this morning. We have Cleola Brown and Josh Williams. Cleola Brown, for those of you who don't know, is the international president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. She's been that since August 2004. She was the first woman to take this role. She also was the first vice president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. We'll be talking about CBTU a little bit today. She has received, of course, many awards. Keeper of the Flames Award, NAACP Leadership Award, CBTU Valor Award, Eugene V. Debs Award for Commitment to the Labor Movement. Last December, just a year ago, she was on with us for an hour as we honored the great now ancestor, Bill Lucy. So good morning, Ms. Brown. We're so happy you could be with us.
Good morning to you, Sister Joni. This is a pleasure.
Yes, and let me also announce our second fabulous guest who won't need an introduction for many of you, but for those who don't know Josh Williams, he was the president of the Metropolitan Washington Council, AFL-CIO, for 35 years. His family was from Jamaica, but he came here when he was a teenager. Their family was the first generation to come to the United States. He settled in Little Rock, Arkansas, but came to D.C. to go to Howard University. He is a fierce fighter for many things, including D.C. statehood, home rule, of course, justice for all. He is with the labor campaign for single payer. And, of course, he has been very much a part of the WPFW family. He used to have his own show back in the day. He used to have meetings with us and advise us of how to move forward strongly. I was happy to see Josh several times this year, including at the May Day parade. And Josh was also the winner this year of the Paul Robeson Peace and Justice Award at the annual gala November 1st. That's just a small smidgen of Josh's great contributions to this world of ours. So good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Joni, and good morning to Chuck and the sister Cleola Brown. It's a pleasure to be here with everybody. I'm always honored when I'm with the WPFW.
And we're honored to have you. So we have a lot to cover in a little bit of time. So let's just jump right into the sleeping car porters. And of course, we have a lot to cover, at least 100 years. So we're going to start with kind of the early history of the sleeping car porters, things like the working conditions, etc. So, Cleola, do you want to kick it off? Tell us what was happening over 100 years ago.
Wow, it takes a long time to get.
I did not to say that she was the under creation now.
Thank you, Josh, for that.
She's still a teenager.
Oh, I wish that were so, for real, for real. But the history is a legacy that is not always with a great big old smile, because it was a struggle. And the struggle was in and outside of the House of Labor, as well as the community, and certainly with the Pullman Porter, with the Pullman Company. But it was one that taught dignity, pride, and brought forth a real meaningful living wage for a number of our communities across not just the South, but up and down the East Coast to begin with. Randolph kind of fell into that role for organizing them, because the porters knew a long time before the organizing campaign that something wasn't quite right. The treatment, the long hours, the shortness of pay, all of that. But it was a job that afforded an opportunity for messages about justice and freedom to travel along the rails. It took a number of years for the organizing campaign to first be accepted and then for there to be a victory. And as all of you know on this call, that sometimes folks in the House cause as much damage as folks outside of the House, and not being able to let those things that had to be private to make it possible stay private. But the struggle was real, and there was so much determination that happened during the course of the early days of the organizing campaign.
Yes, and of course, we have so much to cover, but it's quite a story, and there are several films about it. People may want to check it out. But before we're going to introduce A. Philip Randolph a little more, but I want to ask either you, Cleola, or Josh, to talk about the role of women. And I was shocked to find out that I did not know about Rosina Harvey Tucker,
wow,
who was a native Washingtonian and was with us until the very end, and really, we should spend a whole day or, you know, a whole show honoring Rosina Harvey Tucker. So I'm sure that both Cleola and Josh would like to tell our listeners who she was.
Oh, my God. My face just lights up when I think about a woman with such a long history. She didn't leave us until she was 106 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because she was strong and determined to get the job that she saw that needed to be done. She wanted to get it done.
And she was born, do you remember, she was born, I don't have it in
she
front
was born
of me.
But, Northwest Washington.
But in the late 1800s, right?
Yeah, 1881 was yes. when she was born. But she was born in Northwest Washington, which was incredible. I did not know that for several years because I'm not a Washingtonian. I'm a Southern.
Well, but I'm sure a lot of Washingtonians don't know that. And Josh, I'm going to ask you, you both, we need to make a day honoring Rosina Harvey Tucker. I mean, she's so important, and yet a lot of us don't know about her. Josh, do you want to jump in and share a little more about Rosina Harvey Tucker, born in the late 1800s. I know that you were at her homegoing service, but tell us a little bit about why she's so important.
Well, she's important because of what she represents. Yeah, I was privileged to have met her and a lot of part of her life. But even then, she was still just a such dynamic individual. History, just knew the history of the movement and the history of the Stephen Carr Porters. But she, in my mind, she's representative of the role that women have played in particular in the development and creation of the Stephen Carr Porters. And in general, I don't think we have paid enough homage, and history has not been completed yet in terms of the role that women have played in the development of the trade union movement, mm-hmm. in the fight for equality in this country, and the contributions they have that they have made. And this woman is an example of that. If you take a look at her history and how she fought to create and strengthen the Sleeping Car Porters. And there were others like her. You know, the name of the Sleeping Car Porters was, initially, was the Sleeping Car Porters and Maids.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that last name has been dropped from the title, and I don't know if it was by design of history. And we have here the Sleeping Car Porters. But the port, it was just not a masculine or a male union. It's the union of both men and women. And women played an integral role because while the men were way out traveling the country and not necessarily able to be running the union, the women picked up the mantle and ran the movement, never got credit for the development of the Sleeping Car Porters. So I honor you, Joni, for recognizing that and having us today, at a minimum, recognize the role that they played. And we can dig deeper, if you want, into how they played that role in the development of the Sleeping Car Porters in particular, but what they did for the movement and for society in general.
Absolutely. And let me just say, if we had time, I would open the lines because we have quite a number of listeners, I'm sure, who have ancestors who were women sleeping car porters. And I'll mention one person who Josh and I know. Unfortunately, she couldn't join us today, but Adora Iris Lee always used to tell me about her great aunts who were sleeping car porters. And we don't, so right here in our airwaves, we have stories we could be sharing about these women. I guess we can spend another minute or so. Cleola, did you want to add to anything that Josh said about the importance of the women organizers and women who were very much involved with the sleeping car porters? Or Josh?
I'd really like to, because she was phenomenal. They said she was a woman who was stubborn, to say it in a nice way. But Rosita Tucker was the one that actually helped with the organizing because she was married to one of the Porters, B.J. Tucker. And he was an organizer as the movement moved on, but she was married twice. But while B.J. was alive, she was a person that was pulling together the women, you know, in an organizing effort and making sure that word got out about the campaign and making sure that women raised money for the organizing campaign as well. I mean, she was dynamic. And when Pullman found out about her, they fired her husband. Wasn't going to take that because she ran up in his face and it's quoted that, you know, she looked him dead in his eyes and banged on his desk and told Porter that Pullman, she was not employed by the Pullman company. She says, I love her. I really love her.
Yeah.
So I want you to take care of this situation because I don't work for y'all. And I want my husband to get his job back. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the language is just a tad bit stronger. And it resonated with the man she was talking to because her husband was returned to his working duties immediately. That's the kind of strength that she had.
And wow.
But she started to do more and more. She became the president of the Ladies Auxiliary.
Wow.
It's better known as the Women's Economic Council.
Yeah, we're going to have to see Cleola Brown and Josh Williams. We're going to have to see if we can make some kind of holiday or a special day in honor of her in Washington.
I'm good for it.
Yeah, in all of our time, free time, we can do that. But we really should. Rosanna Harvey Tucker should be known to all Washingtonians, including children.
Mm-hmm.
So let's quickly jump because we have 3 minutes before we have to go to our first pitch break. For those people who do not know who A. Philip Randolph was or is. Cleola, tell our listeners. There are many people won't know that much about him.
Well, he was such a magnificent figure because he stood more than 6 feet tall and had this deep baritone voice and didn't back down from anything. They said he was a gentle giant. But behind that gentleness, he was a man that could command a room in less than 30 seconds. He knew exactly the best strategy to pull off, and he had a magical way of working with folks to recognize their own strength. Randolph was patient, too, because in 12 years, it took him a while to get all of the Porters together. And after they actually did win their struggle, Randolph then had to struggle inside of the labor movement to become its first black union, also the first black to come to the executive council of the AFL-CIO. And he had the courage to confront presidents. I mean, between he and Rosita Tucker and others who raised the question first with Roosevelt about putting on a march, Randolph did not back down at all. He told them, it's okay, we'll have a march to make sure that we could let the country see exactly what we're thinking. That was, I think, 1941, if I'm not mistaken. And Rosita Tucker was right there with them. The first march got called off because they saw the error of their ways and made some combined changes in how folks who had served in the military received the same kind of benefits as those who were white, as opposed to those being left out who were black. But then after that march was pulled off, he then went on to talk about justice, freedom, civil rights, and equality, and put together the March on Washington, if that's where you wanted to go.
Yes. Yes. And
we should not.
Yes, Josh.
No, I just wanted to pick up on that last point that Cleola made, because I don't think that history has really recognized the significance of the role that he played in the March, 63 March in Washington. That was his idea. Mm-hmm. He's the person who conceived it, and he's the person who assigned his number one lieutenant, and help me here, Cleola.
Byron Rustin.
To put that march together. And others have gotten credit well deserved, but history will one day recognize that he was the primary mover and spirit that put that march in Washington together. Not just because it was a march for civil rights. It was a march for civil rights and human rights and dignity of the people. Absolutely. Randolph had a broad vision of the role that that labor movement should play in society. And it was just not about organizing workers. It was about bringing justice to society. We had the capacity, he told us, to transform society. And the labor movement would be judged harshly by history if we did not step up and do what it was that we needed to do. And that, to me, is the genius of A. Philip Randolph. His vision of the role that the labor movement needed to play in society, and just not about wages, hours, and working conditions.
Absolutely. And those of you who have not seen it, can next time you're at Union Station, go check out A. Philip Randolph statue there. I go there often, and I actually pull up a chair and kind of talk with him. It's very inspiring that he's right there at Union Station. But it's now time for us to ask you listeners to help us out a little bit. And Katia is going to help me. And Katia also has a story to tell about the sleeping car porters. Should we do that now? Katia, we'll do that after we ask people to come.
Let's ask them. We have some folks to thank first, Joni, though. We want to thank one of my own fearless leaders, Karen Spellman. Thank you for Sheroes and Heroes on the program. Wonderful friend and mentor. Thank you so very much for your pledge of support. We also want to thank Marsha out of Washington, D.C., and you know who they are.
Yes, yay.
We thank you. We sent you something over this morning, so check your emails. And so they are getting us where we need to be. We have $300 left to go in this hour, and we're off to a grand start. It's 10:22. We can do this together, folks. 800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org. Of course, Joni always brings us an informative and fascinating listen on To Heal DC, and this morning is absolutely no exception. So we are here with her. You are here with her. You're listening. You're taking in the information. You're learning. You're sharing it after you hear it. That is the purpose of WPFW, and that is certainly the mission of To Heal DC, to educate us all so we can move to action and think about and be part of the world that we inhabit. The number to call, again, is 800-222-9739, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org to make a pledge of support. $300 to go.
And how about the Cash App, Katia?
Oh, yeah. $WPFWFM for Cash App. You can put five on it. As we say, Joni, if we had even, my math is bad, 500 people who are listening, right? Put $5 in Cash App, we'd have $500. We would have doubled the goal. So please think about the Cash App. It's a great and easy way. Many of us have that device right in our hands, probably far more than we need to or want to, but you have it there. So put it to good use. You can do $ WPFWFM to Cash App, and make sure that you notate it is for Joni or for To Heal DC, so we know where to credit it. And that absolutely is a quick and easy way to do it.
Absolutely. And you can also be what we call a sustaining member.
Yes.
Our sister station calls it a buddy. You can become a buddy of our show. And you don't have to have the money right here now, but you can make a commitment. You're going to commit to $10 a month, $20 a month, $50 a month, or I don't know if we can go down as low as $5 a month, but you can be a sustaining member of WPFW, and that is very, very important way to support us. You know, these are hard times for most of us, many of us, and certainly PFW, we would love to have a little more money. As I always say, I'd love to see the staff get paid more, but also other basic things that we need your support to do. And I just want to say, I am so excited about this show today. I've been thinking about it all year long, as Josh may know, that this was the 100th year anniversary of the Sleeping Car Porters. And of course, you know, it was also the 100th, it is 100th year anniversary of when Malcolm X was born. And so we did shows on, of course, honoring Malcolm. But we're honoring today the Sleeping Car Porters and everything that they stand for, which is quite a lot. Maybe, and we have a lot to cover, but I just want Katia to briefly mention, we're going to have to do a whole show on this, but as I mentioned at the beginning, we're going to hear from Duke Ellington at the beginning of the show and also at the end of the show. And the jazz musicians actually were very close for different reasons, for many reasons, with the Sleeping Car Porters. So, Katia, just tell us a little bit about your dad and your story.
I come in a little later because by then they had the red caps at the train stations. They were no longer the Sleeping Car Porters. And at the airports as well, they all, both at the train stations and certainly the Sleeping Car Porters especially, they all knew the jazz musicians, and they helped really make their journeys to their gigs so much easier. Whatever they needed, they made sure they had. And they treated them, you know, at a time when, believe it or not, they would travel somewhere and they would have to stay, you know, in the black part of town, which was fine, but often not in a hotel, usually in a room in someone's home. And travel could be difficult. And so they just made sure that they had a soft landing wherever they were going, but also that the journey itself was as enjoyable and pleasant as possible because it was difficult traveling. And so later on, you know, when we would take Daddy to the train station or the airport, they all knew him and he knew all of them. And, you know, he would give them records. And we have to remember the Sleeping Car Porters were also important in making sure the latest record by Duke Ellington or Louis Armstrong or whomever got across the country, because they would take the records as they were going across the country. They would take them to Chicago and New York and Boston and Oakland, wherever the centers were, you know. Right. So they really were an integral part of the music that we call jazz, or that some call jazz. And yeah, we have to thank them for that, as well as everything else they did for all of our people.
Yeah, and we'll have to see if we can do a special show on this. Of course, the Porters.
And there is a connection, Joni. There's a connection between A. Philip Randolph and the jazz that Katia, and the music that Katia grew up in and comes out of. And that A. Philip Randolph, and Viola, you can speak better than I to this, that he was a lover of jazz. It was his way of relaxing. Yeah, and not many people know about A. Philip Randolph's affinity and love of jazz. But jazz was an integral part of this man also. And it's in a program like that we have today that probably being told for the first or second time about the connection between A. Philip Randolph and the music industry, especially the jazz industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the Porters provided safety to the black musicians traveling, especially to the South, and they're very much linked together. So let's jump back to sharing some of the history of the Sleeping Car Porters and the A. Philip Randolph Institute. So let's jump now to a little bit, Cleola, about the founding of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. I believe that was in 1965, or unless you want to go a little bit more talking about the 30s, 40s, and 50s, but what was happening. But we definitely want to share with the listeners about the founding of APRI.
Well, the Institute, Josh mentioned a bit earlier about Mr. Randolph's right hand, and the person that absolutely insisted on making education also a prominent portion of it, and that's Bayard Rustin. the incident was orchestrated by the both of them, but the concept and how it was to function was more Byard than it was Randolph in a lot of instances, where young people were brought in to utilize their minds for how to make civil rights a reality. And quite a few came through the Institute. Alexis Herman came through the Institute. We just lost her recently. Ernie Green came through the Institute as well. And you can call the roll for those who were activists inside of labor, but outside also just in the civil rights community, did summers inside of APRI and helped to orchestrate the demonstrations around the country where young people took the front line. That Institute continues this afternoon, and you know, today rather, and I'm thinking this afternoon because we have a call with them later on this afternoon, but the Institute functions every year annually with a major conference where we teach how it is that you negotiate, where we talk about parliamentary procedure, where we do things as important as manners. It sounds a little bit crazy, but Rustin wanted to make sure that our young people understood the power that they had just in their presence and every end of it. So the history of the Institute is continuing to be taught also. But for one solid week, most times a whole week, nowadays because of the expense of it, mostly 3 to 4 days, we will go to 5 regions in this country. Mm-hmm. 139 chapters around the country in 23 states.
Wow.
And they are structured for the primary purpose of teaching civil rights and civil disobedience, also teaching the basic skills for strength. And we continue to do that through the labor movement, but also through the civil rights and human rights movements.
And again, we are delighted to have Cleola Brown, the president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, on with us this morning. I think Chuck may be on the phone. Chuck, do you want to jump in and say anything? I know Bayard Rustin is one of your heroes. And of course, Chuck, very much a part of the labor movement, is dad.
Johnny?
Yes.
Yes, indeed, Johnny. First of all, I just want to thank Sister Cleola and Brother Josh for just giving this good history that people don't know that it's so important to know. First of all, let me forget I'm charging $100 to the station.
I remember
dad and his union activities. And of course, one of the interesting things that you both mentioned that I just want to reemphasize, one of the people who was keenly aware of this in our time today was also Sister Brother Bill Lucy. Bill Lucy tells a story that when they started to do the sanitation march in Memphis, the first thing he told his men, the sanitation workers, go home and ask your wives if it's okay, because they're going to become essential in making this march in Memphis successful. So that was just another example of the role that women played in terms of being the backbone in so many years of the march, of all the marches.
Absolutely. And thank you, Chuck, for raising up Bill Lucy, of course, very much a part of the labor movement, to say the least, and very much a part of this community and of our show. And it was just a little over a year ago that he left us, but he is still with us in his spirit. Let's, before we have to take another break, let's talk a little bit more about the years, maybe some of the accomplishments of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, or the situation as it evolved with the Pullman Porters. Josh, you want to share anything around those issues?
Yes, Joni. Before we leave the subject, I just think it is essential for us to recognize the role of the sleeping car porters played in the development of black trade unionists in this country. The role in the liberation, the sleeping car porters, one has to recognize the background that George Pullman was no benefactor. I mean, this was a man, and I know the sleeping car porters in movies have been romanticized, being able to travel all across the country and stuff like that. But these individuals were really an extension of the slave mentality back in the early part of the 20th century. Blacks may have been physically liberated, but mentally they were still apart, they were still in slavery and in bondage. They worked some 70-odd hours per week, but didn't see their families when they left home for weeks. They were paid at the average of $28, 28 cents per hour. And they were working over 70 hours per week to be able to make ends meet. And when they were paid, you know, they led to the recognition in their negotiations that workers should be paid not just when they clocked in, but that they were also prep works that needed to be worked, to be done. And today we are still fighting the fight that they began back in the early 20th century, when they fought for pay in preparing before the train left the station, that they had work to do. And when the train came into the station, that they also had work to do. And they had to pay for their own uniforms. They had to pay for their own meals. They were not provided meals by the employer. And they started the fight that the trade union movement is today fighting with respect to when workers' pay begins. When do you clock into a job? This is very significant because the airline clerks just recently went into a strike because they were, and the pilots themselves, because they were not being paid for prep work and they were not being paid for work that was done. And here it was, a group of black individuals who were the trailblazers for many of the fights that today we are picking up. Consider the fact that in 1975, there was a movement called I Am a Man. Well, mm-hmm. Before there was I Am a Man, in the 25, the rallying cry of the porters were, fight or forever be a slave. Fight or forever be a slave was the rallying cry of those workers. Many of them who were not highly educated, but who in their own way made a contribution to what the labor movement stands for today. And history, I think, needs to recognize that many of the things that we are getting today and taking for granted are fights that they made on our behalf before many of us were even born. And I just think that that really needs to be part of that history of the sleeping car porters, is their contribution to our society.
Absolutely. And I want to say that Josh Williams is definitely one of my heroes, and he's a hero to WPFW and, of course, to the community. Has played over many decades, many, many different roles fighting for justice. And I don't know if I mentioned at the beginning that the this year in November, he won the Paul Robeson, the annual award for peace and justice at the Paul Robeson annual gala. So he's one of our heroes. We're very glad to have him on this morning. And Katia and I are going to be urging you again right now to make a contribution to this show, To Heal DC. Make a contribution to this radio station. We are Jazz and Justice. And this is an example, this show today, of how jazz and justice cannot really be separated. And the sleeping car porters showed that with their close protection and support for jazz musicians and much, much more. And Katia, I like to challenge listeners out there who have ancestors who were in the labor movement, or ancestors who were musicians, to make a pledge.
Oh, Joni, are you calling me out right now? Okay, I accept the challenge. You'll see it on the screen. Don't worry. We have some folks to thank, though. We want to thank Michelle Tingling Clemens out of D.C. Thank you so much, Michelle, for your pledge of support. And one of our board members, one of our wonderful board members.
Yes, and of course, she started the show with me some 33 years ago. Yes.
Yes. And we also want to thank Vanessa, you know, labor helping labor. We thank you so much for your generous pledge of support.
Thank you, Vanessa.
As well. And Joni, I'm just going to say it out loud. I will be pledging $50 to Heal DC in honor of Sunny Stitt. How about that? Is that okay? And Pamela Stitt.
That's I'm going to start to cry, but anyway, but
I love you, and you do such good work, and we have to encourage everyone to, you know, as our PSA says about this pledge drive, right? Supporting WPFW is also a form of mutual aid. It is us helping us. We're helping each other, and we're keeping it going. So please make that. Oh, we got another one in, Joni. Hold on.
Wow.
Oh, but it's not coming up for. Oh no, it's not coming up for me. But I can't thank you. But we just saw it change. So thank you so very much for pledging your support.
So again, Chuck and I want to challenge people. Of course, Chuck, as dad, was very much involved with the labor movement, to say the least. Chuck and I, I'm blanking out on everything, but you want to say a word about your dad?
Well, Johnny, my dad was indeed a union person. He was the president of the union in Bogalusa. And the union, by the way, when the supervisor started, the backers, the main backers, the man who was working in a plant. And like I said before, I pledged $100 in memory about that. But if you are a member of part of the union, make a pledge. WPFW,
yes.
ODB, WPFW is the voice of the people.
Yes.
We give the truth. And this is an incredible show of learning for me. Just incredible how much I'm learning. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Make a pledge. We need it.
Yes, we need it. And like Chuck said, his dad was very much a labor union leader. And of course, some of you may remember my mom was also very involved with organizing labor back in World War II. She was one of the first women to work in the shipyards in New York. One of 10 women among thousands of men who started working in the shipyard and organized women into the union. They were not allowed into the union at first. So any of you who have relatives, who have ancestors, or you could also have present family members who you're proud of for their work in labor. Really, we need to be honoring everyone, all of our listeners out there who are fighting for labor, for labor rights, for the people. So you can do that by making a pledge now, or make a pledge in honor of jazz.
jazz and justice.
So let's
800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. And I'm urging everyone out there that loves jazz, knows jazz, understands this connection, and understands all the good work that Joni does, please challenge my $50. I'm in the process of putting it in right now on the phone. You can, even if you're on your phone, you can go to the website, again, Cash App, $WPFWFM, or of course you can call 800-222-9739, or if you prefer the local number, 202-588-9739. Let's do this for Joni Eisenberg and Chuck Hicks and the wonderful work of To Heal DC and the wonderful work of these sleeping car porters whose names we know and those that we don't know.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to sneak this in real quick. Tomorrow, I'm actually doing a special show from 5 to 7 on the 70th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, where labor was also very much involved with that. And you'll hear about that tomorrow. But let's stay right now with the sleeping car porters. And we have less than 10 minutes left. But what else do we want to talk about?
Joni?
Uh-huh.
Joni?
Yes,
you have just opened up an item that, again, the sleeping car porters have not gotten their credit for it. The Montgomery bus boycott. Does history really remember that it was the sleeping car porters who funded and helped to bring a young minister by the name of Martin Luther King to Montgomery, Alabama. It was they who funded that bus boycott, and it would not have been successful were it not for the financial resources and organizing resources that the sleeping car porters brought to that struggle. And I wonder if Cleola, as president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, can just shed some light on the role that people like, C.L. Dellums and E.D. Nixon played in that struggle. And who were they?
Yes.
Well, this is an opportunity for us to really straighten out history.
Well, there are a lot of lines that, Joni, I'm sorry for just jumping in.
Jump in. Yes.
Okay. There are a lot of lines that show the connection between organized labor and the civil rights movement, and Josh just raised one. But before I jump to that piece, I do want us not to forget that a part of the dignity that the sleeping car porters had, a lack of dignity that they had to face, was that George Pullman was a man that really did not think of Black people as humans. And to prove that, he called every porter by his first name, George. Mm-hmm. And people on the train did the same thing. And as a result of it, if some of your listeners would pull down on whatever streamers they have, and I don't know anything about technology and don't want to learn, okay? 100 Men Named George is a real good overview of who the sleeping car porters were, and it tells a bit about the history as well, about the organizing campaign that certainly this hour is not going to allow us to do. But 100 Men Named George,
yes,
came from George Pullman, and they thought that was a cute thing to do for folks. But
And let me just jump in real quick. I watched that movie last night. Yesterday, it's very easy to access for those of you who have a phone or a computer. You just punch it in and you can watch that movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I wanted to add this as well. And thank you, Josh, for that entree into the conversation. A part of what was happening in Montgomery was certainly something that was shared. By the time the march to Montgomery really got underway, the lines had been meshed together in quite a close-knit family of men and women, because the Women's Auxiliary was alive and well and kicking. They knew how to raise some money to keep the pieces going. Everybody was included. And when Dr. King was speaking at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church and talking about the lack of funding that would help that march, and they recruited Sister Rosa Parks as well to do a part of that. Folks started standing up, and the folks that stood up were those who were making some wages, not a lot, but they were the men of the Pullman, sleeping car workers, porters, and they, I get confused with what they wanted to be called. They just really wanted to be called men. And some of the names that Josh raised were certainly among the organizing committee there. And that, again, is the link between CBTU and APRI, because it was the Lucy's Union that helped to pull together that march from Montgomery. And it's so much that's intertwined. It's hard to describe what it was like. But if you had the privilege of knowing any of the porters, you would know that when they, along with some of the longshoremen, for example, would come to the communities where they lived, Black neighborhoods, the women and the children would applaud them, whether they came in those overalls that a lot of them wore as folks from the docks, or whether they came in those dignified uniforms as Pullman porters. Folks gave the respect that was due, that was often not given to Black men in this country, and thanked them for what they did to put an economic base into the communities where they lived. And that gave the courage for some of the younger ones to step up to the plate and to continue the struggle in a dignified way. dignified but sturdy. And that kind of a relationship blossomed under the CPTU and APRI. And it still continues to this day.
Okay, in the 2 minutes or 3 minutes we have left, maybe 4 minutes, I want to ask both Cleola and Josh to kind of give your final words on the importance of A. Philip Randolph Institute, the sleeping car porters, and also where do we go from here? What are some of the priorities maybe in the next year or a few months, or just in general, what are our priorities moving forward, and your final words? Cleola, do you want to share that first?
Sure, I'll be glad to, and I'll make it brief. a part of what is happening now in this country is an absolute disgrace, and we all know that. But standing on the sideline is not something that we can select to do, because it's our communities and our votes that are being hammered in broad daylight. The redistricting in some of the areas, it has to be paid attention to, but more than that, we have to get engaged to make sure that we have a say-so on how it is that we're allowed to vote and what those votes look like. We have to also be cognizant of the fact that although words are not being spoken out loud, they're certainly being spoken in certain at certain tables where we're not a part of it. But the movement as it was originated is what we have to reinvigorate again and again and again. But I know it's an old symbol. We got to get out the vote. Yeah, there's an adage that folks say, yeah, too. But now more than ever, we've got to go to every venue that we have any kind of credibility in and encourage people to take a part in this process.
Absolutely. So
that's where I am hoping that all the activist organizations and just plain old Miss Sally on the block who can tell you everything that's going on, I hope that's what they're talking about. How this upcoming election is absolutely our responsibility to either win it or sit on the porch and lose it.
And thank you so much, Cleola Brown. For people who want to find out more about the A. Philip Randolph Institute, of which you are the president, how can they do so?
In this technology, you can reach us at apri.org. We have a web page. We also have a page on Facebook, and we have telephone numbers. So please, and we are at 815 16th Street on the second floor at the AFL-CIO building. So please feel free to step in, stop in, and sign in. We would love to have you become a little bit closer to us and to join us in this struggle.
Thank you so much, Cleola Brown. It's an honor to have you on with us, as you were on with us last year, as we honored Bill Lucy. We're going to have to try to do another show before another year goes by. Let's, on these very important topics. Josh Williams, I don't want to say goodbye to you, but what are your final thoughts for right now? The importance of the sleeping car porters, and also the importance of where do we go from here? Or anything you'd like to say, Josh?
The answer is an easy one. The execution of the answer may not be easy. But for me, it was an honor today to get a chance to reflect upon those who went before me and on whose shoulders I happened to stand. And we must not forget in this period of uncertainty, in this period where there are those who would try to take back from us what we have gained. We must go back and think of our ancestors, yes, and think of people like the sleeping car porters, what they went through, and draw strength from their struggles, and not take for granted that we are the ones who are fighting today by ourselves. We are fighting with them as our supporters.
Okay. I thought we would have a little extra time with the pledge drive, but I guess not. Well, thank you very much, Josh. Thank you, Mike. We're going to go out with Duke Ellington, Happy Go Lucky Local, in honor of the sleeping car porters.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, December 17th. Here are some headlines. President Trump yesterday expanded the list of countries with full or partial travel restrictions to 20 primarily Muslim-majority nations. The revised policy fully blocks travel for individuals from Syria, South Sudan, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, and also for people with documents issued by the Palestinian Authority. Partial travel restrictions will be applied to individuals from 15 additional countries, predominantly in Africa, as well as to Caribbean nations, Antigua and Barbuda and Dominica. Trump has argued the restrictions are necessary to protect national security and public safety. The number of countries with full or partial travel restrictions to the United States is now 39, up from 19 earlier. The new restrictions go into effect on January 1st. In more news, last week a drone strike in Sudan killed 6 Bangladeshi peacekeepers serving with the UN's interim security forces. WPFW's Noah Portner has this report.
A drone strike on December 13th struck a logistics base in South Kordofan, marking one of the deadliest single attacks on UN personnel since the conflict began. The 6 killed were all Bangladeshi nationals, with 8 others also wounded in the attack. The UN Secretary General condemned it as a possible war crime. Bangladesh held a funeral ceremony on December 15th as the bodies of the fallen were repatriated. Other nations, including Egypt and the USA, reiterated calls for a ceasefire. The Sudanese military, meanwhile, blamed the paramilitary rapid support forces for the strike, part of months of intense fighting between these two factions that has devastated nearly all of Western Sudan. The violence has compounded an already dire humanitarian crisis, especially the lack of adequate food and shelter. From WPFW and WBAI, I'm Noah Portner.
In more news, yesterday President Trump ordered a total and complete naval blockade on all sanctioned oil tankers entering or leaving Venezuelan waters, part of an escalating campaign to pressure President Nicolas Maduro's government. Here again is WPFW's Noah Portner.
The U.S. government is blockading Venezuela over alleged terrorism and drug trafficking, although the economic implications and Venezuela's massive oil reserves cannot be ignored. The move follows the recent U.S. seizure of a Venezuelan-linked oil tanker last week and the imposition of sanctions on Venezuelan companies and vessels. Analysts say that the blockade has left millions of barrels of crude oil stranded at sea, with only the U.S.-owned company, Chevron, still exporting under a special U.S. license. Chevron is the only major U.S. oil company operating in Venezuela. Caracas has denounced the blockade as a grotesque threat and a violation of international law, while allies like Cuba have condemned the U.S. actions. The European Union has also recently extended its sanctions on Venezuelan officials through 2027, reinforcing broader international pressure tied to human rights. Aside from these humanitarian concerns, however, is the fact that Venezuela has the world's largest proven oil reserves, more even than Saudi Arabia. Also, over half of this oil is exported to China, the USA's major geopolitical rival. From WPFW and WBAI, I'm Noah Portner.
Rainbows high, the rhythm soaring.